This evening, we're going to take a close look at greatness. And we're going to start by looking at Job. There's only a handful of people that God specifically calls great. Now, he has different things that he says. David was a man after his own heart. There's some amazing people that lived with Abraham. God told Abraham that as he obeyed his word, that he would make him great, a great nation. But go to Job chapter 1. Job is specifically called the greatest man in the East during his time, during his lifetime. So Job chapter 1. Let's take a look at this man and see why is he called so great? What is it that made him such a great man? And first of all, we're going to have to take a look at who he is. So verse 1 of Job chapter 1 says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was perfect and upright. Now, perfect doesn't mean he never made a mistake. The only perfect man was Jesus Christ. But this means he was spiritually mature. He was had it all together. It wasn't flawless, but he walked faithfully before God. This man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Evil was distasteful to him. And there was born to him, unto him, seven sons and three daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she asses and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. So that's quite an introduction we get to this man. So to take a second here and look at who Job is, because sometimes it's readily understood or realized who he was. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 11. To start us off, I'd like to first identify where was this land of Uz. So Genesis chapter 11, and if you go to the end of this chapter, and we're going to start in verse 26. And it says here, Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So this Abram's name was later changed to Abraham, but here we see the family. Abram had two brothers, Nahor and Haran. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah was their father. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran begat Lot. So Haran's son was Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. So it specifically here identifies where Abram was living and tells us about his family and that his older brother Haran died prematurely. Verse 29, and Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Issachar. So we're getting a little bit more detail of the family. But Sarai, Abraham's wife, was barren. She had no child. And so it's going on here and telling us the beginnings of this whole man, this great man, Abraham. Well, let's read the next verse. And Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to unto Haran and dwelt there. So there's a little bit of understanding that has to be taking place here. Terah, it sounds like Terah was leading them, but not that's not the case. God called Abraham to leave his family and go to the place that he would show them. At this point, Abraham was living in Ur of the Chaldees. He had also taken on the responsibility to raise his brother's son since his brother had died. And the family decided to go with Abram. They decided to travel north along the Euphrates River with Abram, because Abraham said, I'm going here. And we learn in Joshua 24 that Terah, Abraham's father, wasn't worshiping the true God. He served other gods. So Abraham was going because God, the Father and of our Lord Jesus Christ, the creator of the heavens and earth at this point, had called Abraham to go to a land he would show him, and certainly would have told him the direction to go, but he didn't tell him where the land was. And Abram took off, and his brother Nahor and his father came with him. And they got up about 200 miles, and they stopped. They camped there, and here Abram stayed for 5 years. It says until his father died. Now, there's other verses in the Word to put this together. But they called the city that they landed in Haran. They named it after their brother that had died. That's something we see happen in many places. We have places throughout our country that are named after people that have died. Lincoln, Nebraska, Washington, D.C., so many other places. So here they've landed in this place, Haran. So now I'd like you to jump to, we're going to come back to Genesis, but go to Acts chapter 7. The reason we're going to Acts is because there's a great man, Stephen, that stands up in front of the religious leaders of his day and time, and he began to present a brief synopsis understanding of the Old Testament. And in Acts chapter 7, in verse 2, we read, and he said, this is Stephen saying, and he said, men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran. Even though there's a CH there, it's the town Haran that we just read about in Genesis. And said unto him, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee. So God's the one that called Abraham to leave this place in Chaldea, or the Chaldees, and to go north. And they went north to this land that they named Haran. So that's how that came about. Verse 4 says, then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans, this is Abraham, and dwelt in Haran, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land where you now dwell, or wherein you now dwell. So we can learn that Abraham's father was 200 when they left Ur of the Chaldees, and he died at 205. So Abraham was originally called when he was 70 years old. And then they went up and spent 5 years until his dad died. Abraham was a great man too. And he didn't just kick his dad and his brother out. You can't follow me. I'm called of God. No, he was a very loving, gentle man. And he just had a great love for God. So he allowed his brother and his dad to come with him, even though God said, separate. He separated from where he was at. God said, leave the land you're in and separate from your family. Now, when his dad died, then Abraham continued to go to the land that God wanted him to go to. He wasn't there yet. And so go back to Genesis, please. Genesis, chapter 12. So you got to put this together. Genesis 12. Now the Lord had said, past tense, unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation. So here Abraham's going to be a leader of a great nation. And I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. That's quite a great man he's going to become. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So see, he had lived in Ur of the Chaldees, moved up to Haran, and now he's leaving Haran, and he's going to get to the promised land. Well, we're not going to continue to follow Abraham at this point because we want to look at Job. So go to Genesis 24. Genesis 24. We're still putting together a few important details. Here in Genesis 24, this is at the end of Abraham's life. Verse 1. And Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house, that ruled over all that he had, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and I'll make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven, the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. So Abraham's living in the promised land, but he's surrounded by the Canaanites and these other, the Philistines live there, and he doesn't want his son Isaac to marry someone there. So he's going to send his servant back to the land where his brother lived to get a wife for his son Isaac. And so he says to him, verse 4, but thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred and take a wife unto my son Isaac. And so this chapter tells us about how he goes back to the land where they had camped, and they had named the city Haran. And then Abraham's brother Nahor had moved in that same area, and he had a city that was named after him, Nahor. And so they come to this place that Abraham's been told. Look at, go to verse, or go to chapter 22. Go back two chapters for a second, and we'll pick up a detail that's important. We're going to go to verse 20, Genesis 22 and verse 20. And it came to pass after these things. So the things that happened above are, you can read about this at another time, but anyway, Abraham had was leading his family. It came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, behold, Milcah, she hath also borne children unto thy brother Nahor, Huz, his firstborn, and Buz, his brother, and Kemuel, the father of Amram, and Chesed, and Hazo, and these other names. But what I want to show you here is that Nahor had a son named Uz. In Job, it's UZ. Here, it's HUZ. See, so there was Abram moved up to Haran. They named the city after his brother Haran. Nahor moved up there. Nahor had children. There's a city of Nahor, and there was a land of Uz. This is where Job is. When we pick up Job chapter 1, he's in the land of Uz. So how did that happen? Well, I want to briefly just tell you how this happened. I'm going to recount for you some details that we learn about, that there was a point in time when Abraham had Isaac, and then Isaac had Jacob, and Jacob had 12 sons. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. He had the 12 tribes of Israel. And Genesis records how the 10 of the brothers were jealous of Joseph, and they wanted to kill him, and ended up selling him as a slave to the Midianites, or these Midianites that were traveling through the land. And Joseph ended up in Egypt. And we can read about how Joseph was in Egypt, and he rose up to become the second in command of the whole country of Egypt, because he walked with God. And there's some great things written in Genesis about Joseph walking with God in Egypt. And it got to be the place where God told Joseph there's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And you won't even remember the plenty because the famine will be so severe. And Joseph had so impressed the king, the Pharaoh, that the Pharaoh made put him in charge of the land. He said, okay, what do we do? And Joseph says, we're going to put away money, put away food for these 7 years of plenty so that we'll have it when the famine hits. He believed God. And sure enough, the famine gets to be 2 years old, and all the land around about, including where Israel, Jacob named Israel, had lived with his other sons, they all were starving. And so people were coming to Egypt to get food. And it turns out that they come to Egypt, and they find out ultimately that Joseph is the ruler of Egypt, second only to the king or the pharaoh. And so Joseph is able to save his family because of his wisdom to take care of things and walk with God. And he brings all his family to Egypt because that's where the food is. Now look at Genesis 46. Genesis 46. That was a brief summary of what had happened in these chapters. Genesis 46 says, Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, well, I want to skip past some of this. Jump down to verse 5, please. And Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and they came to Egypt. So see, Joseph was running the country of Egypt, and the king put all his trust and confidence because Joseph was has proven to be so wise. He said, where can we find one so discreet and wise as Joseph? And then when the king learns that Joseph's family is over there in Canaan, he says, well, bring him here. Let's have your family come here and we'll take care of them. And so that's saving their lives. Joseph, the Pharaoh even sent the wagon, sent a, I'm sure an entourage to transport this family of Joseph to his country. And so in this, look down at verse 12, it lists all the people that came. And when you get to verse 12, it says, and the sons of Judah, and Onan and Shelah and Perez and Zerah, but and Onan died in the land of Canaan, so they didn't make it. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul, and the sons of Issachar were Tola, Puva, and Job, and Shimron. So here, amongst the total, there's 66 of them total. Look down at the end of the list of this group. It says down in verse 26, and all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons and wives, and all the souls were 66. 66. And the sons of Joseph were born to him were two souls. So all the souls of the house of Jacob, which came to Egypt, were 70. 70. Joseph had married and had two daughters, and then there's 66 others that come. But in that group is Job. And when you it lists everyone by name, and there's only, besides the wives, there's only two daughters that I can see in that group. Well, there's all these single men and only two daughters. So Job, being a great man, he doesn't want to marry an Egyptian. Just like Abraham didn't want his son Isaac to marry someone from the land of Canaan. And so he sent back to where his brother Nahor was to get a wife for Isaac. Well, Job, in a similar way, doesn't want to marry an Egyptian girl. And he goes up to that same place to where his grandfather Isaac had got a wife. He goes up to the land of Uz, where Nahor, Abraham's brother, had landed. So that's how Job ends up being in the land of Uz. Isn't that amazing? Go to Job chapter 1 again. So we see how this fits together. It's pretty interesting to see this man Job. This is one of the reasons he's so great, is because it didn't mention any of these other boys that didn't want to marry an Egyptian and they went looking for a wife from the place where their descendants were. But no, but Job had that kind of integrity, that kind of love and respect for God, even when he was going to choose someone to marry, rather than stay there in the luxury that Egypt would have provided, because Joseph running the country would have had all the abundance available. But he wanted to get a wife that was a believer wife. It's amazing. So we're looking back at Job chapter 1, and I read to you the first three verses. Look at verse 4. Oh, verse 3 ended with the greatest of all the men in the east. So that's Job. and his sons went and feasted in their houses, everyone his day. Many of the texts say this was on their birthday. So on the birthday, they'd have a celebration. Well, we still do that today. And sent and called for their three sisters to eat and drink with them. What's missing here is where's dad and mom? If we live near our family now, and when our mother was alive, she would always come to the birthday party along with my brothers and sisters. Isn't that seem typical and normal? But for some reason, these children have excluded mom and dad. And it was so when the days of their feasting were gone about that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said that it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Well, Job's a great man. Why does he think this? Well, there must have been indications from his family. Obviously, they're not inviting mom and dad to the party, that they are not having the respect that they should have for their parents. And so Job's praying for them. I'm sure he wished that they would understand the history, no doubt he would have taught them, and how God had blessed them. And look at the abundance that he has, these thousands of animals. And yet they're not inviting mom and dad. And so he's praying for them. He sees that there's something up here. It's an interesting record here. Jump down to verse 13. Verse 13, and there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. So they're having another party, and mom and dad aren't invited again. And these are grown adult children. They're drinking wine, they're living on their own. They're not just young kids. They're adults, and they've made these decisions to exclude mom and dad to their own detriment, because look what happens. And verse 14, and there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. So this is some terrible news that's going to come to Job. The enemy wants to attack. The whole Bible shows us that when someone stands for God, there's many times when the enemy, the adversary, the devil is putting pressure on that person. Throughout the Old Testament, we find out why was Israel always under attack by these different groups, the Philistines, the Midianites, these other groups. Why was that? Well, because that was marshaled by God's enemy, the adversary, the devil. And so here, Job is a great man and he loves God. It says we saw the introduction to him. He's such an amazing man. And so here comes some pressure. We can't, just because you walk with God doesn't mean there won't be any pressure. And so it goes on and he suffers all this loss. Verse 15, the Sabaeans we read about. Verse 16, while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and has burned up. This is lightning. Hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Remember in Acts 27, when Paul is being transported from the Caesarea area over to Rome through the Mediterranean Sea, they encounter this terrible storm, this hurricane. They call it a Euroclydon, the storm, and it almost took their lives. Why did that happen? Because there's an enemy. The enemy marshals all kinds of ways to try and defeat God's people. But as God's people stand on the word, then we can be victorious. So here, verse 17, while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away and slain the servants with the edge of the sword. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. What terrible news. Now, Job didn't cause this. I know sometimes people have thought, well, later on in chapter 3, it says that Job had fear, and because of that fear, his sons and daughters died. Well, no, these sons and daughters are old enough to believe for themselves. But Job now is devastated that he's lost his family and lost all of this. And yet, look what it says in verse 22. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. He didn't blame God. Well, see, that's what great men do, is they don't blame God when things go wrong. Rather, we pray to God so God can show us the way that we need to walk, the way out. It says in 1 Corinthians 10:13 that God will always make a way to escape. God is faithful, who will not allow us to be tempted above that which we are able, but will with the temptation make a way to escape that we may be able to bear it. That's our God. So when we start to face challenges, go to God and recognize God's got the way out for me. Well, go to chapter 2, Job chapter 2, and Job is having a very tough time. He laments that he was even born. He's having a tough time. He just suffered amazing loss. It's been very difficult. And you know, I wonder sometimes in the community that Job lived, what did the neighbors think? What did the community think of Job? His own family wasn't standing with him. And he lived with all this abundance that he had, all these flocks. He certainly would have been doing business in the community. And you know what? I just don't see any of them standing up with Job or even coming to his to mourn with him when he suffers this loss. Look at verse chapter 2, verse 9. It says, "Then said Job's wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity?" So even she's so devastated, saying, "Job, just give up. God's not taking care of things anymore. Curse God and die," she says. But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? Not that God provides the evil, but we have challenges to face. And all this did not Job sin with his lips." Again, it reiterates this great man didn't sin. He's not blaming God. Now, verse 11, when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Well, God's word doesn't just have extraneous words thrown here and there. Every word is important. We are learning the names of these individuals that have come, and they are relatives of Job. See, we already saw Job was one of Jacob's grandchildren, and Abraham, when he had Abraham and Isaac, he had Jacob, and then when Sarah was 127, Abraham's 10 years older, he's 137, Sarah died. And it says shortly after that, Abraham married again. He married this woman named Keturah, and Keturah had several children. One of the children was Shua. You can read that in Genesis that Abraham had Shua. Well, Shua was Abraham's son from his second wife, and Shua had a son named Bildad. So Bildad is a descendant of Abraham. He's a grandson of Abraham, like Job, similar in age. And then Eliphaz, if you look at who Eliphaz is, he also, I guess Bildad was in Genesis 25, and Eliphaz is in Genesis 36. And Eliphaz was a descendant of Esau. Jacob's twin, Esau, had a son named Teman, and Teman had Eliphaz. So we're learning that these people that were relatives to Job had learned about this tragedy. He had lost everything, including his children, even his physical health. And they came because they're family. They came to mourn. They came to bring comfort. That's what the word says. It says again, we're in Job chapter 2, and I read to you verse 11. Now, Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him. They came, everyone from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Again, I read nothing about the community comforting and mourning with him. And the reason I bring that up is because it says they sat down in verse 13. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was very great. See, they came because they loved him, and they're just quiet with him. But where are they staying? I don't know that they're staying at Job's house. I think there may have been interaction with the community. See, what I'm thinking is that these men came with great heart for Job, but then all of a sudden, these chapters that follow are going to show us that they begin to fall in and start questioning, well, Job, you must have done something that brought about this calamity. That may have been motivated by the community, but whatever reason, it's the enemy that motivated it. And Job is presented with, maybe you deserve this. Maybe there was stuff you did. But Job never lost his integrity. Throughout the next 36 chapters, he's never losing his integrity. And look what happened when we get to the end of the book of Job, Job 42. We're going to close. You know, I was looking at where Job shows up, and he shows up in the book of James in the New Testament. And James is writing about the patience of Job. Wow, when I thought about that, he certainly did have patience. He had patience with these miserable comforters because this whole loss, before it turns around, the best estimate is that it's about 6 months. Well, why didn't he tell these so-called friends of his, miserable comforters, to take a hike? Why don't you guys just go home? But he didn't do that. Because you know what? They're family. And he loves God. And he continued to talk with them, to work with them. And ultimately, he's going to pray for them because that's what a great man does. He doesn't just give up on the relationship because there's some disagreement. He stands fast and he's a great man of prayer. And in Job 42, let's look at verse 7. Job 42, verse 7. And it was so that after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee. See, God told Job that he ought to pray for his friends. And now God is talking to these friends. The Lord said unto Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken of me the thing that is right, as my servant Job hath. Therefore take unto you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job, and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering, and my servant Job shall pray for you. For him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, in that ye have not spoken of me the thing which is right, like my servant Job. So Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite went and did according as the Lord commanded them, and the Lord also accepted Job. So Job prays for these guys, and it's amazing. Verse 10, and the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then came there unto him all his brethren and all his sisters and all they that had been of his acquaintance before. Where did they come from? I think Bildad and Zophar and Eliphaz would have reported back to their family. about Job. They obviously had heard about Job. They knew what was going on with Job. They heard about his calamity. And imagine when they told back about how amazing their cousin Job is and what a great man he is, because now all these people are coming. And he has twice as much as he had before, and he's got all these acquaintances that have come, and they've comforted him over all the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. Well, the Lord didn't bring it upon him. The Lord actually delivered him from all that. But it says every man gave him a piece of money and everyone an earring of gold. So the Lord had blessed the latter end of Job more than the beginning, for he had 14,000. It tells us the extent of what he had. It's amazing. And after this, verse 16, after this lived Job 140 years and saw his sons and his sons' sons, even four generations. He had 10 more children. God replaced the 10 children that were there before. But it's amazing to look at this great man, Job, and how he was patient, how he endured the challenges, but never gave up on God and never even gave up on his family. Sometimes family's not going to stand with us. We see that in the word. But you know what? We can still stand and we can still pray for them. Especially in our day, we can have family that's maybe going in a different direction, but they're born again. Thankfully, they're born again, and we can just pray for God to work in situations to defeat the enemy that leads them in the wrong direction. That the culture that we live in can really get people worked up and get them moving in different directions. And we just need to be able to maintain friendships and family and just continue to pray to God to bring about his word and do our best to walk with him. And God will bless us. God blessed Abraham with such abundance, and God certainly blessed Job and called him the greatest man of the East. God bless you.